Welcome to Narratives. Tim Flannery thinks the news on climate change is dire when you look at the facts and figures, but he also thinks we should be optimistic that we can halt or even reverse the damage.
Readers of this book will discover that we are already living in the climate future. We are already confronting dire scenarios: the melting of the polar ice, the profound degradation of the Great Barrier Reef, the displacement of people in coastal cities due to extreme weather. And yet, even though I've tried to explain the terrible outcomes that await us if we do nothing about carbon pollution, I've called this book Atmosphere of Hope. That may seem to be a strange starting position from which to argue for renewed optimism. But if we're to have real hope, we must first accept reality. We must cut through the dense and complex debates about climate that leave many feeling lost and paralysed. This book describes in plain terms our climate predicament, but it also brings news of exciting tools in the making that could help us avoid a climatic disaster. In December 2015, the nations of the world will gather in Paris to try to forge a climate treaty designed to give us a fighting chance to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius, widely regarded as the upper safe limit if we're to avoid catastrophe. If we succeed at Paris in forging a new era of international political cooperation in the fight against a warming planet, it's possible that the next decade will astonish us with the solutions that we'll discover to safeguard our planet for our grandchildren and their grandchildren. We will quite literally create an atmosphere of hope. Let's try to understand the dimensions of the problem. Projections indicate that in 2014, we humans released a record 40 gigatons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, of which 32.2 gigatons came from the burning of fossil fuels for energy, mostly electricity and transport. CO2 is only one, albeit an important one, of over 30 known greenhouse gases. If we add together all human-related greenhouse gas emissions and express them in terms of CO2's warming potential, the figure at the end of 2009 was 49.5 gigatons of CO2 equivalent, in other words, the warming potential of nearly 50 gigatons of CO2. A gigaton is a billion tons, a number with nine zeros after it. Even measured against the world as a whole, a gigaton of CO2 is large. How large becomes stark if we consider what would be required to take 4 gigatons of CO2 out of the atmosphere, all of the world's agricultural and forestry waste, and the biomass from 100,000 square kilometres of sugarcane would need to be turned into biochar to do that. And 4 gigatons of CO2 is only a tenth of our annual CO2 pollution stream. Alternatively, if we planted forests over an area the size of Australia or the continuous 48 states of the USA, assuming that we could plant an area the size of New York State each year, we'd only reduce our carbon pollution stream annually by a similar amount, averaged over 50 years. No matter how you measure it, our climate problem is now gargantuan, and it's grown far faster than almost anyone imagined it would just a decade ago. We should be focusing on reducing emissions by the gigaton. Frustratingly, the objective of the political negotiations is expressed in degrees Celsius rather than gigatons of carbon. It's widely anticipated, however, that an agreement in Paris will put the world on a carbon budget that will give us a 50-50 chance of keeping average global temperatures no more than 2 degrees warmer than they were prior to the Industrial Revolution. That would be a huge improvement over our current worst-case scenario path. And it's possible that if we can reach agreement, the deal might be substantially improved, perhaps by providing a 5-year review of the target. It is important to understand that such an agreement would constitute a massive international breakthrough, but it nonetheless does stake our future on the toss of a coin. We ought not to contemplate a future in which we accept that there is still a significant chance that the Great Barrier Reef will die, that sea levels will rise rapidly, and the great loss of biodiversity will be inflicted, all of which is likely to happen in a world 2 degrees warmer than our pre-industrial average. Global agreement in Paris is necessary, but in itself it's not enough. Instead, we need more ambitious work and more tools to employ than we now have. In all the history of our planet, geologists can find no time when atmospheric CO2 concentrations have risen so quickly, and yet there's no doubt that the rise has been caused by us, for we can measure how much fossil fuel we burn, and we know precisely how much CO2 is thereby created. We also know that there can only be one successful outcome, before 2020, we must achieve an absolute decrease in annual global carbon emissions, and that means reducing the amount of fossil fuel burned. Astonishingly, we now have the first intimation that this might be possible. On the 13th of March 2015, the International Energy Agency announced that the growth of CO2 emissions from fossil fuel energy sources had stalled at 32.3 gigatons. Even if 2014 marks the peak year for global CO2 emissions from the energy sector, and it's too early to tell whether that will be the case, the battle for a stable climate is far from over. It's clear we'll need to achieve massive cuts in emissions between 2020 and 2030 and to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions from burning fossil fuels altogether by 2050.
You have been listening to Tim Flannery reading from his book, Atmosphere of Hope. The Narratives Library is produced by Karina Wynne-Moylan of Arts Campus Bay FM 99.9.